Welcome to another episode of Mediocre Movies, where we're looking for the most okay movie of all time. I'm Riley.
I'm Keaton.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Cal.
Just quickly, for those who don't know, we have to watch films between 35% and 65% on Rotten Tomatoes, and we are looking for movies that make us feel absolutely nothing. The Ice Cube.
The drywall.
No, definitely not the rapper.
No, not the rapper.
Ice Cube, the rapper.
Like he had a good day.
The State of Water.
Yeah.
Where water becomes solid.
Yeah. Just bland.
Yeah. Bland tasteless. Nothingness.
Nothing, yeah.
Alright, so we watch Goofy Movie, directed by Kevin Lima, released 1995, and it has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 53, meaning it is very legible and very close to the center. Does anybody have anything they want to start with early on? Brad, I feel like you've got a lot to say about this.
Go on, Brad.
No, like, I really like this movie, having not watched it in depth. I think on a very surface level, it's very enjoyable, and I can understand why, like, children would enjoy it. I like a lot of the scenes in this movie. I'm gonna like fawn over a couple of things in that, but after like having a couple of things pointed out to me, I'm like, oh yeah, there's some stuff in here that like just slips under the radar, but when you really look at it, you're like, oh yeah, that's a bit weird.
Mm.
So
yeah, that. I have huge gripes. We'll start with what the movie did well. Does anyone have anything? Because I want to say, I think the themes are done very well in this. They're not too ham-handed, although a little bit. There's times where you're like, ooh.
Look, okay, so the Goofy Movie is obviously, you know, a children's movie or like a family movie, animated film. And it tackles kind of those really relatable issues. I would classify it as a coming-of-age film for Max, the son, and his relationship with his father, Goofy. And there, you know, there are central themes of like selfishness that both share and then try to overcome this due to a communication breakdown and whatnot. And so I feel like it's a very safe movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to approach, easy to watch, easy to kind of digest. And then you just shit it out later and then just forget about it.
Yeah. Just in case people listening haven't seen the Goofy Movie, we'll do a really quick plot summary.
I will just read you the plot summary.
Is it like three lines of Wikipedia?
Though Goofy always means well, his amicable.
Can we get someone who can read?
Cluelessness and klutzy pratfalls regularly embarrass his awkward adolescent son. When Max's lighthearted pranks on his high school principal finally gets his longtime crush Roxanne to notice him, he asks her on a date. Max's trouble at school convinces Goofy that he and the boy need to bond over a cross-country fishing trip. The one he took with his dad when he was Max's age, which throws a kink in his son's plans to impress Roxanne.
Yes.
So.
And then essentially, I mean, spoilers, but really, not really. It's, what, 22 years old now?
It's old.
Well, I mean, and it's a kid's film, so you can kind of predict the ending already. Yeah. Everyone gets a happy ending. It's not like...
Five people do not get a happy
ending.
That is
true. Goofy goes on a very unspecified carnage.
Not including the scenes that we don't see people die in.
So, like, you said it was kind of...
Coming of age.
Yeah, but it's like a non-impactful sort
of... It's a safe film.
For a Disney movie, and particularly for like a like, you know, Walt, like a
very Walt
Mickey
Disney.
Mouse cartoon, yeah, sort of thing.
Yeah.
It all, for me, it almost teeters on like a deconstructivist sort of view of that world. It's very aware of itself. Do you know what I mean?
That is definitely true. I want to bring this up. I'm probably going to bring it up now. But there's a scene where they're in the car and they're playing a guessing game.
20 questions. Yeah.
And so Goofy goes, oh, is this a man? Max goes, yeah. And then Goofy immediately goes, Walt Disney, is that it? And apparently that was the answer. Which means that Walt Disney somehow exists in this world.
That he created.
Disney characters. But then what is he famous for? If all these people are just people.
He'd be God.
But yeah, maybe it's like, if I go 20 questions, is it a man? And I went... Yeah, I went, I don't know. And then you go, oh, are you talking about God?
Yeah,
and
yeah. Yes, like, yes. But they just gave God like, yes,
but they know that Walt Disney is a man.
But they have like churches of Walt Disney somewhere.
I think Walt Disney is the same person he is in real life that he is in the movie. He's just a Hollywood bigwig who made it big in like the 40s.
But for what?
But yeah, that's the thing, because Walt Disney made it big for Steamboat Willie and all those other cartoons featuring Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and Goofy.
Yeah, you
know, if they're just regular people in this universe, then what the fuck did he get popular for?
Are they dogs as well in this universe? Are they animals in this universe? Or are
no,
they
like.
People?
So, like, Stephen King exists in, like, the Stephen King universe, right? Like, he's an author in the Stephen King universe.
Oh, he just writes other books.
He just writes other books. So, like, so Goofy makes... I mean, Walt Disney in the Goofy movie universe makes other movies, other cartoons, right?
Hey, but they're, like, of real people. Because there's no possibly, people.
It could be, like, Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Where
yeah,
he's yeah. where in this Goofy universe, he's created Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead.
Yeah,
and that's what
he makes 3D animated films about people.
Yeah,
in inverted commas.
This will never work. It's too weird.
Yeah.
Point being, it's self-aware.
It's self-aware. Like it's more than
what?
It's more than that. It's like, hey, remember that goofball who like you know goofball literally who went like down the big slope and then he was like yo-hoo-hoo-hoo! And like he fucking
he can't die.
Yeah,
but it's deconstructivist in terms of like. All right, well, he can pass on an heir, and it's like, okay, what's this dude really... Like, if this dude really existed... I'm not saying that he's immortal or anything like that. It's cartoon...
We're not getting into that.
It's cartoon physics, because that's just a...
The deep lore of Walt Disney. Oh, how quickly we've sunk into it.
Whole different candidate.
But, like... It's deconstructivist in that, like... Yeah, it's, like, looking at... Goofy beyond just like
a goofball,
you know what I mean?
And
I quite like it for that. It's like got a nice charm to it that it's like ballsy enough to be like
yeah, kind of deconstruct the character yeah. that we know and love.
Nowadays, like if you wanted to do like the same thing, I think it would work a lot better nowadays because I think like the culture is like primed for that sort of like deconstructivist thing is postmodern.
Are you saying this movie would do well if we re-released? Like if it wasn't released in 1995?
No, if you remade it now in the current like climate, I don't know if Goofy movie is integral to like the you know pop culture now.
I would say there are a lot of things that would miss because this is a movie very much of its time.
This movie is just 1995.
Yeah, of course. But yeah.
Sorry, no, go on.
But I feel like in the current climate, it would work better. You know, when you think about, like, a lot of the other media that we're watching now that is very deconstructivist, it's like, you know, we're looking... I mean, that sort of stuff's existed for a long time. Like, stuff like Watchmen and stuff, that's deconstructivist superhero stuff. Yeah. But, like...
I feel
there's
like...
There's no Walt Disney work like this.
Yeah, I...
21 Jump Street is a deconstructivist view of Jump Street, right? 21 Jump Street.
Yeah. The movie,
The show, right?
The show, yeah.
So it's like, that's kind of the point that we're at. So it's like, if somebody came out nowadays and said like, oh yeah, we're going to deconstruct like Steamboat Mickey and like the world that exists in and like the space that those characters inhabit.
Yeah.
And it would work, I feel, a lot better now. I feel like maybe this movie was a little bit too early for...
like Wreck-It Ralph.
Ahead of its time.
Wreck-It Ralph is a good example of this, of deconstructing like a video game world or whatever.
Yeah.
But I also feel like, given its time and the climate back then, and the attitudes that people, viewers, audiences were watching it back then, it did a pretty good job of deconstructing and analysing the character anyway. And I feel like we don't necessarily need to re-release it in this day and age. What we can just do is just, as we did, just rewatch a classic and then use our, you know, knowledge of the climate. And, you know, kind of see what we can get out of it. And also because, so one of the things that I enjoyed about the example is that it's got this 90s sensibility, this kind of very just family fun, slightly camp kind of humor.
See, I'm not sure if that's like got anything to do with the fact that this is a spin-off movie of like a sitcom that Disney ran in the early 90s called Goof Troop. So like if it's a very similar style of comedy, then they're kind of just sticking to what they know.
Right. Yeah.
But then with musical numbers.
Having never seen Goof Troop, I can't speak.
No,
yeah, exactly.
Neither.
No, I did not sit down and watch Goof Troop.
But like
we should though.
I'm glad that they stuck to that anyway, regardless of whether or not it's like from a pre-existing kind of content, if you will. I think it just there's something endearing and almost kind of charming about just how silly it is, which is why I said it's a safe movie, because you can just kind of turn it on, sit there and enjoy it.
It's in the middle of, like, it is definitely is in, like, the middle of the road. You're not like, this is a boring movie. This should never have existed. And it's not like,
this is God tier.
This is God tier. It's just, yeah, comfortably in that middle ground. Just
comfortably.
Yeah, I'd say I enjoyed it more than I disliked it.
And I also feel like it doesn't apologize for the fact that it is kind of in the middle of the road. It's just like,
hey, we made a movie.
We made a movie.
It's barely a movie. It's 70-something minutes. It's really short.
It's quite short.
Yeah. Cut out all the musical numbers. It's like just over an hour.
Yeah. Again, Goof Troop, obviously. But like, I'm just trying to think of things that came out around the same time. Not exactly around the same time, but bringing movies from like a kids' TV show, which was a pretty common practice in the 90s. I don't do it as much as they do now. Totally, like, you know, I was speaking before about, like,
there are some, but they're usually straight to DVD, like Victorious, the Disney one.
But this got a release?
Yeah,
this got a theatrical. This finished second in the weekend that it opened.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1995, which is quite surprising.
You know what I mean? And it's like,
although it was competing against Bad Boys.
Yeah, but the fact that, like, this is a movie that has a very, like, niche audience, I guess. Like, there's it's very much a kids film.
Yeah, but kids aren't niche. There's lots of kids out.
Yeah, but like, if you're a parent, you can take your son to see something called Goofy Movie.
Well, you're not going to go take him to see Bad Boys that has Martin Lawrence and Will Smith. I mean, you've got.
But like I'm just trying to think of movies that came out around that sort of era. I'm thinking like Rugrats movie. That was definitely one that was that came off of a TV show. And it's kind of like, yeah, it kind of sort of sticks in that sort of safe sort of thing of like,
we'll make money.
Yeah. And particularly going with like, they definitely go with format. They kind of like Rugrats movie. What would you call like the genre of the Rugrats movie? I can't.
It's just a kids action.
It's like an action like adventure.
Adventure film. Yeah. Adventure film.
Right. Which is like, you know, which is kind of what the show is, but just sort of taken up to that next level. Again, having not seen Goof Troop, I can't speak for it, but I imagine, yeah, in terms of the humor and that sort of stuff,
probably be very close.
Just trying to make it a little bit bigger, but still safe, and still using genres that they know work. You know what I mean? Like the road movie and the coming of age movie work pretty well in a lot of like. Even if you use different styles, it's like it works. Like that format of like point A, point B, narratively works really well. And then like in the middle of that, obviously you're going for like going off the track and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, whatever happens.
But point A, point B.
Well, you know, like think about it. This movie's really broken down into two very basic episode plots, which is a fishing trip with dad that you're embarrassed by and having to cancel on a date and lying about it. And they've kind of just taken those two very basic plot ideas, which you could see in any, I mean, if you look at any TV show, then any sitcom, those two ideas work, and they've just put them together for a movie. It works.
I feel like the way that you say two plot points makes it sound like they're completely irrelevant to one another. Because I feel like it's important that they both. Because, so, when we were talking about themes of, like, selfishness before.
Goofy selfishly wants to go on the trip, take his son.
To take his son.
Although he does do it slightly selflessly because you think he's going to go to prison because he has ability to reason, apparently.
I think what it really is about, and this is kind of, like, one of the nice things about it, is it's really about a breakdown in communication
between
two people, the father and son.
Two generations.
You know what I mean? It's like you have that nice thing. And very like very safe plot point to go with, very easy to like execute. But it's like, you know, fundamentally, it is about like a breakdown in communication. And, you know, all the inciting incident stuff, the inciting incident's kind of dumb, I think.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, like, you know,
your son will go in the electric chair if you don't take him fishing. And
fucking Christ. The principal in this movie, let's just talk about him.
He gets, what, like 5 lines of dialogue, I think.
Yeah, and he's basically like, hey, Goofy, if you don't sort your... He's a rebel without a cause, Goof. And if you don't put him in line, he's going to buck. He's going to buck. And then you're going to get kicked in the face, Goof.
You need to put him down.
You're going to get him in line. Otherwise, you're going to take him out.
Your wife is dead and or missing, and you don't want your son to follow.
He's off the tracks, Goofy!
And so that's pretty much...
That's the inside.
And then Goofy has to see a small toy, and he's like, I've got it. I figured it out.
Yeah, I'm going fishing.
We're going fishing.
Because he's like, I don't want my son to die. Like, Goofy is like a total... like, I don't know if he's a helicopter parent, because in this movie he is blatantly...
I don't think he is.
Disregarding his own safety, the safety of his son, and the safety of every other person around
him. I think that's just
that
goofy,
is quite true.
I think he's just a careless person.
Yeah.
This is what I've seen. For anyone who's seen Dirk Gently, he's the assassin. He's immortal by pure luck. And like he's
like
not,
some universal force, almost as if somebody is drawing him into action.
Yes.
Almost like he's a piece of fiction.
But like
a fictitious character.
Because Max stands so close to Goofy.
Right, he gets
Max is not allowed to die.
He gets like secondhand.
Yeah, it's like he's stuck inside the Goofy force field.
Alright, that's a little...
Alright, just back to what we really liked about the movie. The 90s guy with the mohawk.
Okay. Yeah, can we please talk about this guy? Because it's uncredited, and the guy who voices it is fucking Paulie Shore, which is the most 1990s person you could pick to possibly play the most 1990s character in any film ever.
There is a scene where he yells, Cheddar!
So just for the listeners at home, Cal, could you talk about Paulie Shore a little bit so that...
Paulie Shore, he is a comedian who had a... very short-lived career in the mid-90s.
The character he plays in this movie is Max's friend, I'm going to say. I feel like it's Max's buyer.
It's a guy that Max knows.
Yeah,
and he just kind of hangs out with. It's not like it's his friend, because he's like, hey, can I borrow your TV? He's like, yeah, but you got to pay me in cheese, because apparently he...
I'm pretty sure that's just weed.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure that's just representative of weed. He's like, I'll give you my TV and I'll help
you
do...
For a bag of weed.
For a can of spray cheddar, which he then proceeds to spray all in his mouth and eat.
Yeah.
Cheddar, bro.
And then when he's in the principal's office, he makes the leaning tower of cheese up. And then eats it. I'm like, man, if this is meant to be weed, this guy is brave. This guy is just smoking in school hallways, followed by smoking immediately in the principal's office.
It's a good analogy, though.
I think that
lends itself to like talking about Max a little bit, because
he has to have one friend, I think.
But he does not seem popular at all at the start of the movie. It's like he's waited until like the very last day of this session, the term, to like
be cool,
to be cool, and pull out this like radical move where he's like, "I'm gonna do a song from Powerline." Which, like, imagine that in the real world. This is like, you can't draw.
Yeah, that's like the kid who comes to school on the last day and brings like a katana with his fedora on.
Yeah,
and he's like, "This will make me cool," and everyone's like, "Now I'm just uncomfortable."
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Well, essentially, I think Powerline's meant to be Michael Jackson.
Yeah, it's like a combination between like Michael Jackson.
And so essentially, I don't think this portrayed well, because he just went up there and pretended to be, and they were like, it's clearly not Powerline because he's about like 2 foot shorter.
Yeah.
And they're like, now it's just a weird kid dancing on stage. But he can sing. And also,
I think
everyone
he's just
can sing.
Yeah, I think it was just lip syncing.
Is he?
Yeah.
But then he sings the other songs, so he can sing.
But
he hasn't got like the Michael Jackson Prince sort of thing. But like that one small act, which would never work in the real world.
That would just make everyone uncomfortable.
Yeah. Like, for anybody who has ever tried to impress a girl, that's not how you do it. That's not how you do it. It's like,
unless she also brings katanas and fedoras to the whole
Also,
day.
Actually, on a similar note, admittedly, this is an American film set in America as well. And
true.
I know for a fact that people, when asking people to go to homecoming, they devise like crazy elaborate schemes to...
True. But he's not asking you to go to homecoming.
No, I mean, that's true. But you can kind of see how they're kind of relative. And this is high school as well.
Yeah.
So, like...
But it's such an elaborate scheme.
Here in Australia, there's like...
Also...
I would never see this happening. But in America, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, there might be a thing. Also, just quickly, the school hall has a trapdoor, which the principal falls down.
That's...
And I don't understand why the school hall.
It's a stage production.
Yeah.
So people come through the floor.
Okay,
and also hanging.
Look, I've never worked in theatre.
Yeah. When they need to kill the kids, particularly evil.
School hangings.
That's where Max was headed if he stayed down.
That's the principal's
the
like, trip. Electric chair.
My electric chair.
Hang in the auditorium, we'll get everyone to watch.
By electric chair, not prison. My own electric chair. You're going to come pick him up by 2 o'clock.
He's gonna die.
That leads to a good segue, actually.
Goofy should have just been like, wow, man, we really need to change school districts.
This movie has a, like, seriously dark CD on the sides. Like, we were counting the death counts.
Yes.
Death
toll. Oh, yeah.
So, it started when they get on... So, we just... Now, we jump forward just a little bit. But Goofy is on the highway, and he drives with his legs, which means he has no feet on the pedal, which doesn't make any sense. But he's not looking because he's reading the map. And he runs through a construction site and hits a tower. And two people fall from a height that I would say is at least 20 to 30 meters.
Yeah.
So I'm going to count them as dead. Well, because that's a big fall.
They also include the Wilhelm scream, which is pretty much just a cinematic
death sound. That's death.
Let's just assume those two people are dead.
Dead. Yeah. And then he kills the guy at the... Max kills a guy at the amusement park when he punches his... The costume. The head comes backwards. And he gets dragged away by children who are jumping on him. Then you have the guy that he whips at the concert when Max uses the swing. He swings down into the sign and the security guard follows him, like, holding on to him. And because Max is the son of Goofy, he can't die. But the security guard...
He's got the immortal skills.
The security guard, he's got no relation. So he runs into, like, an electric, giant electric TV that's, like, 40 meters above the air. An explosion occurs... And he's not seen again. So I don't want to say his fate's great.
Sealed, but it's...
And there was one more that I can't...
I can't remember. There was a fifth death.
There's also a scene where Goofy and Max are, like, fighting over with the control of the car, and they pretty much...
Destroy all the
railing. Destroy the railing to stop people from falling off this massive cliff.
Yeah, very narrow cliffside road.
We can't even count how many deaths that would lead
to. I mean,
to,
at the concert, the TV explodes and covers everybody in glass, and you see it. They see them get covered in glass and they cheer.
Yeah.
Which is not how getting covered in glass works.
I almost feel like Goofy is kind of an embodiment of, like, a god of destruction, chaos, and death.
Like, they're just traveling across the country.
Yeah, exactly. They're just traveling across
the country. Eternal suffering.
Goofy's immortal, right? Goofy's immortal, so it doesn't matter what he does, but his actions lead to the death of others.
Of everyone. Not others. Just literally anybody who crosses
path.
Oh my god. That's why he doesn't have a wife. Because he killed his wife.
But wouldn't she be in the bubble?
She went to start the car.
No.
And he filled the car with piranhas somehow or something.
Max survives. See, Max survives because he's half god.
Yeah.
He's a demigod.
But she's just mortal.
He's a human.
Woman.
He's a mortal woman. That's
mortal
she,
dog
that's
woman.
That's why she never shows up in the movie. And she's never mentioned either.
And Goofy's not smart enough to realize he did it.
Okay.
It was a...
Notwithstanding, it's... I mean, you can derive that from the plot. But, like, it's never stated anywhere that Goofy is, in fact, a demigod. So I think that's a working... We're going to put that in our little fan theory box.
We'll make another podcast for canon. Yeah.
But, like...
Brad, do you want to talk about the opening scene?
Yeah, this movie, for a Disney movie, I think it was pretty ballsy that they open with A Wet Dream.
Yeah.
Like, it's on the nose, Wet Dream scene. Yeah. Because it's like, just to, for anybody who hasn't seen it, which I don't know why you're listening to this, but, like... it opens with, like... Max sort of in a field, you know, a wheat field. It's almost gladiator-esque, you know, it's like a thing. But, like, that movie came out after.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott, you got a lot to answer for.
This movie inspired a lot. There's a musical scene that's later on that's literally just La La Land, and we're pretty sure that Damien Chazelle just pitched the movie after watching this movie.
Yeah. But, yeah, so it opens with, like, Max waking up in this field, or, like, being asleep in this field.
A big field of wheat.
Yeah, big field of wheat. Very, like, airy sort of thing. And then you hear the disembodied voice of, like, Roxanne with, like, Max, Max. And he's sort of, like, following the voice, and she's, like, standing on one of, like, the pillars, like the Greek, you know.
Like in Star Wars.
No, like,
we're pushing that.
Like, one of the Greek pillars, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And she's like, it's a pillar.
It's a fucking pillar.
So, she's standing on top of that, and she's like in this, like, flow. This is like a 15-year-old girl. I'd like to reiterate.
Please do not arrest us.
It's kind of, like, flowy and, like, you know, very sort of seductive and that sort of stuff. And then she kind of flies down.
Yeah, floats down.
And that's when you're like, all right, this is definitely a dream.
Or, yeah, you know, this is another guy.
Yeah, well, true.
Yeah, possibly.
In hindsight.
So she floats down, and then, like, you know, she's, like, laying there with, like, Max. And then, like, some weird fucking Cronenberg body horror shit starts happening, where it's, like, the goofy teeth, he's like, and it's, like, thing, and then, like, he starts getting bigger, he's like, oh, fuck, and then it's, like...
He turns into Goofy.
He turns into, like, a 50-foot-tall Goofy, and then Roxanne's like, ah! It's like a 50s monster movie. It's just fucking insane.
How is that a wet dream, though?
Because it starts like a wet dream.
Yeah,
it starts off like a wet dream and becomes a nightmare.
Yeah. He ate too much cheddar.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Cheese is such a reoccurring theme in this.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, like, it just opens on this really weird... It's not even... Because the next scene that you go into is all about, like, masturbation. You know what I mean? Yeah. It just goes from, like, wet dream to masturbation, because Goofy, like, comes in dressed in, like, a towel with, like, a towel wrapped around his head.
Like Mrs. Doubtfire, essentially.
Yeah. And he's, like, bursts in there, and then he's like, Dad, and then, like, you know, Goofy goes back out. He's like, sorry, son. And he, like, knocks on the door and comes back in.
Yeah.
And it's like, that. What you're meant to infer from that is that, you know, little Max was whacking it. I wonder if
he's having a wake and shake.
Yeah, he's having a wake and shake. He's like, yeah, it's like, this is taking too long. 7:50. But I wonder if he changes gloves when he does it. Anyway.
We'll get to the gloves in a minute, because I have big gripes for this.
That's another thing. But, like, yeah, and then, like, thing. And it's, like, you know, it's set up like a pretty conventional sort of, like, teen movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think it's, like, Disney's attempt.
Dads don't understand. Or parents don't understand, in this case, dad.
Yeah. It's Disney's attempt at, like, I don't even want to say it's, like, a John Hughes film, but there are a few, like, Ferris Bueller references.
Especially in the high school bits.
It feels like, you know, Disney's like, oh, yeah, let's try and do a John Hughes movie with in part with Goofy or Max, I suppose, in this instance. Because, I mean, you know, the movie is kind of 50-50, those two. But,
well, like, look, like I said, you know, it's just a fairly fun but fairly safe film, so they were kind of just ticking the boxes.
Of course.
But in saying that, just super quickly... There are some really nice scenes that kind of hit a slightly deeper note.
Yeah, of course.
For you, Brad, it's the motel scene.
Yeah, I really like, again, if, like, you've seen the movie, I think you probably, at least recently, would know the motel scene. I've, like, read a lot of people online note this scene as being, like, particularly impactful. I don't know what it is about
where
it.
Where are you reading people?
I was just like,
Goof Troop forums, you idiot.
They're still running after 27 years.
GoofTroop.net.
Dot GeoCities.
Anyway, so, like, because I watched, like, the clip online last night.
Mm-hmm.
And before I watched the movie this morning. But, like, yeah, people talk about in, like, the comments on the YouTube video about, like, just how weirdly impactful this scene was. They're talking about everything in this scene feels way more realistic than anything in the rest of the movie. Yeah. I think that's maybe a deliberate thing, but it's like, you know, even, like, I like how it's lit. It's a very, there's a very nice coolness.
The colours are very nice. It's all very, like, green.
Yeah.
Greeny blues.
In like, the middle of a desert, I was kind of thinking, in a weird way, it reminds me a little bit of Natural Born Killers. Like, there's a lot of scenes in Natural Born Killers where, like, which is a weird thing for them to derive a thing from, but, like, there's a lot of scenes in Natural Born Killers where they use, like, fluorescent light like that in this sort of... I know there's probably other films, but that's just the first thing that jumped into my head. Like, they use fluorescent light in this sort of ambient way to make you feel, like, completely isolated, which, like, works so well for that scene.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is the end of the second act, this scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say it kind of signifies... So, and this is the bit where they get their furthest apart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
In the movie, like, quickly for people who haven't seen it for a long time, this is the bit where Goofy discovers that Max has changed the map in the car.
Yeah.
And finds out that Max has changed the plan so he can go to a concert to impress Roxanne. And, like, this is the bit where they get furthest, because Goofy's like, my son lied to me.
This is the reason why it's so impactful as well. Because it's kind of like Goofy, and like you were saying at the very beginning of this podcast, Brad, that this is like a deconstruction of the Goofy character, right?
Yeah.
And the universe that he lives in. And kind of this scene totally strips away from kind of that innocence.
His goofy nature.
That goofy nature, and kind of it's a sobering realization that
he doesn't trip over, that, he doesn't like get hurt, he doesn't kill anybody.
He slowly walks to bed and just lays down.
It's a sobering realization that you know, no one is perfect. No one is inherently 100% good or bad, even. Mm. But we're a mix of things, and he's starting to realize that his son is not perfect. And in extension to that, we realize that Goofy is not just
he can't laugh everything off.
He can't just laugh everything off. Yeah. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, like there's that like that great like back and forth between like PJ and Max and Goofy and Pete.
Yeah,
and it's just cutting between like those two, and it's kind of like a nice thing because the boy, like, you know, it's the boys are kind of, you know, chatting away and enjoying like youth and innocence, and then like the men are kind of there, like, and Pete's kind of like, you know, you gotta like,
you gotta put
you bring him back in the line, and like, you know, I think that sort of thing, when you talk like when you look at like the relationship between like a father and son, that sort of back and forth that kind of exists of like, this is what I expect of you and this is kind of what you're giving me, and it's like there's that that dichotomy between those, or like there's that back that pull, push and pull between those two things, you know. It's like you know, and particularly to have like Pete sort of I think like I don't know, like
he's definitely the bad guy of the film is Pete, because he kind of takes Goofy and makes him do things that are against Goofy's nature, and it doesn't work for Goofy.
Yeah, it doesn't.
He doesn't have the, I don't know, the sternness to push.
Because, yeah, Pete definitely represents that model of a father who's very cold, very calculated.
I don't think he's my necessarily...
Son, it's like, your son doesn't like you, but my son respects me.
Yeah.
But it's like,
I don't think he's necessarily an antagonist, though. He's just a different character, a different archetype.
He feels that role.
He does feel that role. Okay. That's. But then wouldn't you say, like, the principal is the inciting incident there?
Well, yeah, but...
But he feels his job.
Yeah, he's just... He's, you know...
He's like, kid fucking destroyed a TV screen. He's like... And pushed me down a fucking hole.
Yeah, it's like, how mad I'm gonna threaten to kill him in the gymnasium in front of the other children to set a precedent.
I also want to quickly add as well another scene that I thought was quite good, and I know Riley agrees with me as well, is the
Hi Dad soup.
So it's like the alphabet soup scene in the car, because that's kind of the first time you really get to see a glimpse that both of them start to realize there's a lapse in communication between the two.
But that's kind of like not an emotional high, but like to as a call.
Yeah,
you've kind of got like that emotional high with that sort of scene, and it's like that realization and all that sort of stuff, that sort of, you know, that moment when they are like, we can talk to each other and that sort of stuff, compared to that like just emotional, and it's very gut-wrenching, the fact that like Goofy realizes what's happened in that scene when they like when he hits the like, that's that for me is when it feels the most real, you know what I mean? It's like when he hits the thing and the like the Matt glove box opens up, and lit with that orange light.
Yeah.
So perfect, you know what I mean? It's like it's just this moment of like
Pulp Fiction reference, by the way.
No, I don't think so. I think like again, I can't talk enough about the lighting in that whole scene, but like I think it's definitely just its own thing. It's like a scene that's so like blue and grim and like sort of subdued, to have that orange light in that moment of like realization. It's very sinister. It's got like a very like a warmness to it, but not like a good warmness, like just a hot warmness.
Well, then see, the thing that bothered me about that scene is it ends with the line of how many cups of sugar to the moon, and then Max goes,
that's a weird thing
this
to
is
be
the,
bothered
the,
by
the cup scene. The soup scene. This is the soup scene.
Yeah. That scene.
Oh,
ends.
Sorry. Yeah.
Because that's also the scene where he smacks the glove box. And the map comes out.
And then he changes it.
Then Goofy wakes up and says, how many cups of sugar to the moon? And Max says, 3.5. And then Goofy goes, huh. And then falls back asleep. Which I felt was just a weird kind of off time joke. And I just laughed at it because it was really bad.
So out there that like you can't do anything but laugh.
Yeah, and I was like, that was a weird way to end that scene, because then it... I mean, and then we have the gaping continuity errors.
Yeah.
But we'll get to those in a minute. Is there anything you want to talk about, Cal, before we... Anything you have huge gripes with?
Anything I have huge gripes with?
Yeah, we'll just jump to
the gripes. I think we've covered the positive things. Really,
yeah. It's a very good coming of age movie about a father and son relationship. I can't think of anything else. I mean, we wrote Cats in the Cradle on this sheet about 40 million times.
And I sang it quite a few times during the film.
Gripes? Anything real quick?
I have like major gripes, and it's not so much with the film itself, it's more with how the film was made.
Yeah.
The animation is kind of garbage in some scenes.
Yeah.
Like, especially...
And this is only something you notice on a close viewing.
Yeah, exactly. This is only something when you're looking for stuff to talk about. This is... In the background, there's like a few characters that will just be motionless. They won't blink.
Any character in the background is motionless.
No. Because there are some scenes. There's one scene in the diner where Goofy announces that he's giving the map over to Max. And half of the people in the background are clapping. And then the other half are just standing there like fucking statues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just like the kind of like disconnect that really takes you out of the movie.
Yeah.
The second you notice it, we first notice it when it happened at the high school.
Yeah.
And he leaves and then the kids stop walking behind him.
Yeah, they just stand there.
When he starts singing. Yeah. They're just standing in walking motion.
And like, yeah, it really takes, like, it is an animated film. Obviously, they're on a budget because, you know.
Yeah. But they couldn't just get him to walk off frame. Yeah.
It's just kind of that thing that takes you out of it a little bit. And I guess the other major gripe I have with the film, in terms of being a film, is how quickly they just wrap the entire thing up.
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about it, like, they finished the entire film and all the issues about it in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
In 5 minutes, this also goes into my continuity thing absolutely bothered the shit out of me. But we were looking, because it goes for 78 minutes, I think.
It's really short.
Minus the credits, so probably like 75.
It's not even an hour and a half.
It's like an hour ten. The car's falling off the waterfall. We're literally getting to the end of the movie. And then from falling off the waterfall, it ends in 5 minutes. And in that time, they magically teleport to the concert, magically break in, magically get on stage, magically get all the way back home, and magically have the emotional reconnect. All in 5 minutes, which is like...
Well, I think the like the reconnection between Goofy and Max happens at the waterfalls.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, you're right. It's kind of like an Ex Machina, right? It's just divine intervention happens, and then just that's it. It's done.
I think
they kind of have the reconnection moment there, right?
Oh, they do. Yeah.
And you can kind of like write that off as like, all right, the band's back together, like that's thing. But it's like, there definitely should have been like a 15-minute segment, or even a 5-minute segment of just like, all right, we're at Hollywood now, we're in Los Angeles now.
Well, the car goes off the waterfall, and then Max parachutes. Shekhov's cast comes in.
Oh, that's right. They use that, like, I'm impressed that they use that about 4 times in the last 10 minutes.
It's pretty good, too, actually, to be honest with you.
It's quite good how that's used.
Goofy teaches Max how to do the perfect cast at about, after halfway, I reckon. And then in the last 5 minutes, he does it about 3 times.
He uses it to save Goofy from falling off the cliff. They use it to do a sick dance move in the thing. And then eventually all the other kids who are watching it start using that as the same dance move.
Yeah.
And I think that's the 2 times it's used. It's just... You kind of offhandedly get it, and then he attracts Bigfoot, and they get stuck in the car, which is also a weird scene, which has continuity errors out the wazoo. But then they just managed to bring back that cast, and I called it from the beginning because I think I remembered it happening. Is it the perfect cast is how he saves his dad? And then they're parachuting down, and then you just get like a weird white fade thing.
Yeah.
And then somehow at the concert, 2 suitcases get thrown. And out of those suitcases come Max and Goofy.
Look, when it comes to the narrative and the plot and how it's padded out, there are quite a lot of assumptions that the viewer has to make to connect the dots between the thing. I mean, the most glaring is what we're just talking about, the waterfall to the bloody stadium. But there are other moments where they just make really big jumps.
So they come away. They come out of suitcases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
At backstage.
Yeah.
Just in the backstage. So
and then they just go.
So you kind of just meant to infer like, oh, they
somehow they got to LA.
Yeah.
They got into suitcases and they got into the car.
They landed. Yeah. They walked to LA because they weren't in LA at the waterfall.
Mm.
Then they got in for the concert at the night. Then they got suitcases.
I assume.
Got in the suitcases in the truck. Truck goes to concert, they throw those ones without noticing that this guitar weighs now the same as a person.
Also, admittedly, again, this is a children's film.
Yeah.
A child's film. So, like, you know, those assumptions can be made for people who are not necessarily trying to look for a clear-cut explanation for everything. It's just...
This is such a large... But this is such a large
jump. It is a really big jump.
Yeah.
And then, like, also, the car as well appears in the final scene, just beaten up. Nothing kind of
wrong with
it.
That's also the bit that bothered me.
And the car is supposed to be completely just bogged down in
you know, waterfall. I think, like, a way they probably... Like, I'm just trying to think. Has everyone seen, like, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
Yes, but not for a very long
time. Okay, so there's a scene in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back where, like, they the second half of the movie, they're obviously running around, like... You haven't seen the movie?
Keaton has.
No, I haven't seen
it. Okay, so they're running around, like, a lot in Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, like, these are two very similar... Like, not similar movies, but, like, they follow...
Sequels, I think.
Sequels, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they follow a similar beat. It's like, all right, we've got to go on the road to A to B, road movies, that sort of thing. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know.
Slightly different.
But there's a scene where, like, they get to... They're running around like a back lot because they're trying to shut down like the Jay and Silent Bob movie, which is their goal, which is like Max's goal is obviously let's get to the Powerline concert. So like just swap those two things out.
Yeah.
And Jay and Silent Bob are held up by Diedrich Bader's character who plays a security guard. And he's sort of like, he's like, you know, you have to, I can't remember the line, but it's basically like, he's like, you've got to do like a teabag or like, you know, I'm Mr. Teabag or something. And about like giving him a blowjob, I think. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've seen that movie. I'm not saying that Goofy and Max should have like been stopped by a security guard who's like, hey guys, you want to suck my dick? But like... you swap out like...
That would have been a dramatic...
That would have been such a long way to go. Such a change. But like... You just have, like, the security guard who's like, oh, hey. Like, even if you had, like, Donald Duck or
there's
something like
that. The security guard at the end who goes, hey, kid, you're not meant to be here. And then
but killed. You could have introduced that security guard, like, a scene earlier when it's like, we're here at the stadium. How are we going to get in?
Yeah, even if they walked towards, like, a stadium that had a light shining from it. And you can imagine it perfectly. People are walking towards it. And then Max is like, all right, we're here, but how are we going to get in?
Because you can imagine...
Don't worry about it. And then, like, it's solved. Because they, like, they just see, like, a pant and you just see empty guitar cases.
Yeah.
And then that would have perfectly explained it. You would have been like, they're going to get in those guitar cases, hooray.
Either that or you bring it back to, like, the musical melodies. You guys remember, like, the old Disney cartoons where you'd have, like, the dancing instruments and that sort of stuff? Yeah. You have dancing instruments going backstage...
Yeah.
And like Goofy and Max like see them like walk past a bathroom and they're like perfectly Goofy and Max sized.
Yeah.
And so they take the musical melodies, instruments and beat them up and get on stage
they
like that.
Dressed up as the instruments.
Yeah.
Jeez.
That would have worked.
You know what I mean?
That would have been like, or just one of his back power lines back up.
Yeah.
And then they just get on stage and like he does a spin and then all the clothes fall off.
Because if you're gonna like do the, you know, deconstructivist cartoon thing, you may as well use those cartoon tropes as plot devices, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Because
for sure.
Otherwise they kind of just jump from one to another.
Yeah, the ending feels really rushed.
That's probably something to, I feel like they could have done just thinking about it, but like they should have used more of those cartoon tropes and I think again if they made it nowadays they would totally do that, like you know the idea of like the hammer space, like, you know, you throw a circle onto the ground and all of a sudden there's like a thing. If they could use that in like a realistic way, I think that would be like interesting to me. You know, it's like, all right, why can't I just pull this thing from behind a pole with no logical explanation? I'm sure there's movies. I don't know if like any of the recent Looney Tunes movies do anything about that.
I have not seen any recent Looney Tunes movies.
Did Back in Action use any of those?
They used a lot of cartoon tropes.
Yeah.
And that's why it made it quite bad, actually.
You think so? Yeah, but like in a cartoon world, if it's like you can give like...
Yeah, if everything's cartoon, that's where the move. That's where Back in Action comes out, but that's not what it's...
Yeah, I think that's the problem with this film, though, is, like, Back in Action tried to do cartoon tropes in the real world. This tried to do real-life tropes in a cartoon world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
so, like, it kind of would have felt a little bit awkward if, like, you have all this serious father and son stuff, and then it's like, hey, let's all do really wacky stuff.
That's
like,
why when it gets really ridiculous, I can't understand.
So you think it's better when it's not being ridiculous?
I think you have to pick one or the other.
Yeah.
Because you can't do the motel scene and then you can't kill five people in your movie.
I agree.
Without any consequences.
Yeah.
Oh, so, okay, look, I feel like pushing it any further become, that's when it becomes too ridiculous. Yeah. I feel like as is, it did a decent job.
Although I didn't mind the one where you beat up someone and you take their clothes and take it, because I think that's a good enough trope that you could be like, yep, go for it, done. Yeah. Another continuity error is the car, which falls off the cliff and then just magically reappears and they drive.
Yeah. So,
and just, also blows up while Goofy's in it, which he survives, which is imagining how he killed his wife.
Absolutely.
His wife.
No, he killed his wife because he's the god of destruction and death.
So just let's just go backpedal a little bit. From the Grand Canyon to Los Angeles.
Wait, does he live in the Grand Canyon?
No, that's where the car... That's where the car
drives to, yeah. That's a long trip,
That's a big trip.
That's like a couple of hours.
That's a seven-hour
trip.
Yeah,
seven-hour trip, I was going to say.
So, there's a whole segment of that movie where...
Not only is there a whole segment of that movie, they literally go back from Los Angeles home. Which is...
The entirety of the film.
Which is the entirety of the film. They go back.
Assuming, where do you think... Like, where does Goofy live?
It's on the other side. If you look at the map in the movie, it's from one...
But where
I'd want to say, like, suburban, like, New York, New Jersey.
Like, upstate New York.
I would say Florida. Like, any sink on that coast.
Yeah.
You look at it, it looks like a suburban village in Florida.
It might be Florida, actually, to me.
Anyway, he drives across the US...
Yeah.
In a car that was worse condition than the car he drove there in, because now it has been underwater, and literally the second Max steps out, the car explodes. So he spent that whole trip in a car that was
pretty bad.
Teetering on explosion.
Like you hear it in like the opening song, like in the not in the opening song, in like the first song they sing, the open road song.
Yeah, it splutters.
It splutters. It's like
it's not making good noise. Yeah. It's garbage. They fill it full of water, sink it for like a few hours, and then manage to resurrect it.
Yeah. Well, I imagine like the tow guy.
Yeah.
The guy who's like, watch it, Mac, or you'll be getting towed. I think he's, in my version of the movie...
He was stalking him the whole time.
Yeah, he's like the driver from... No.
He was watching...
Actually, I was reading this last night. Really interesting tidbit.
Yeah.
Pete was originally meant to be... Oh, fuck, what's... You know, like, Steven Spielberg's Duel, the TV movie he made? About, like, the truck driver just, like, tailing the guy, following him across, like, through the desert and all that sort of stuff. Pete was originally meant to be a truck driver that mimicked that plot.
Okay.
Just driving cross-country, like, following Goofy.
That would have made that movie so much better.
If they did
he's in the RV and he's literally everywhere that he is.
Yeah, but, like, obviously they were going to take it to the point that he's, like, just... pushing Goofy along and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They should have made that truck driver the Watch It
Mac
truck driver.
You just love that guy because he has a great one.
Yeah,
great
I'm like,
line
one
like,
great line. He should have, like, and he should have shown up at the end and it's like, looks like you boys need a tow. And then, like, helped him get the car out of the bottom of the waterfall.
And he's like, I'll take this to the scrapyard. And Goofy's like, just unhook it. I'll drive it from here. Yuck. And he's like, it's literally filled of water. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
I can't die.
But that gives an explanation to everything that's in it. Like, those two scenes, the like, yeah, let's go to the stadium. Let's swap out, like, the two backup dancers. Think. That's that whole plot resolved.
Yeah, just all it needs to have fixed is you just need to explain how they get to the concert, and then how did they get the car back, and how did they get home so quickly? Because those are the three. Like,
what indicates that there's what indicates that there's like any progression enough time between the concert and when they get home?
They travel across.
I mean, there has to be because
obviously
nighttime to daytime.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. But is it, like, are we meant to infer that they just made it across country?
Again.
Is it like, oh, that was a really great party that we had, and then, like, Roxanne gets home and it's like, Max is there? Because that would make no sense. But, like, if it's like, oh, yeah, that was a week later, that was the concert, that was...
See, yeah, they don't really... So
yeah,
Roxanne says,
really
I saw you on the TV and you were great.
Yeah.
But there's no indications whether it was like yesterday or like
or
4 weeks
or...
ago. Or,
yeah, I assume it was like, it doesn't take you a day to drive across the US, does it?
Is
that even possible?
LA to New York, I don't know how long that is. But you can, like...
You could drive, but I'm going to say
can,
take...
Look, I think... if Florida to LA to Florida would That's going to take
LA at least to like New York.
Full day of driving. At least driving. A full day of driving.
It's so, a 40-hour drive.
So yeah, it's almost 2 days.
2 days. But it's not a week, though.
But yeah. Goofy can't die, so he can just he doesn't have to stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Just go full speed as well.
And he just puts a brick and then puts his feet on the wheel. He's lost his map.
We got this footage.
Also, how did he drive back? Because he very badly needs the map to get there.
He needs his son yeah. to read the map. There's a lot of stuff in here about like Goofy's like mental faculty.
Also, the map is literally just it was just a line that he drew from one corner to the other. Which is about...
No, but there's also a bunch of loops in there
There's
a
loop, but that's about as useful as just saying we need to go here.
Yeah.
And then getting in your car, because it doesn't follow any roads.
Yeah.
There's no highways on that map.
See, if they're going to remake this movie now, it would be very different through the advent of GPS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
like, I'm going to change the input on the GPS.
Yeah, I'm going to change the stopover. No, but
wasn't the whole thing of letting Max do the map?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how it's like they determined that he was lying.
Yeah.
For him to be a man as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I think the final thing that kind of I had a little issue with was that the music is just very...
forgettable.
For us, it's just not very memorable.
I mean, for three of us. Brad,
like, views the movie through, like, completely rose-tinted lenses.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I think, like, I'll concede, like, there's a few scenes. Alphabet's soup scene. Definitely.
That's great. That is
definitely a good scene.
Yep.
Motel scene.
That is a good scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, like some of the songs I find enjoyable, but yeah, it's, like, sure. it's not like
look the songs when they're playing they are enjoyable.
They're good.
They're good
and they're funny. They're funny.
You know,
and it's a funny movie. Like I'll definitely concede that.
But after watching the movie, like when the movie's over and done with, I will not for the life of me be able to recite either the tune or the lyrics.
Yeah,
there was one that was called Eye to Eye, and that was the last one by Powerline, and that's all I can recall.
And it's a Disney film as well. Like Walt Disney Company was the one that released the film. It's not 100% a Disney film like Aladdin or Mulan or whatnot. But
yeah,
you know, you're competing against kind of those powerhouses, songs are like.
Yeah.
Like the thing that you remember from the movie. Mm-hmm. So
I just can't wait to be king. Like you can always do that in your head.
So you know, that's one of kind of its downfalls. But I just feel like overall though, I'm not mad at the film.
No.
I think I
enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. For what it was worth, I enjoyed it. And I gotta remind myself when watching it that, you know, this is aimed for families and their kids. It's not built for
20-year-old single white men.
I think something like going back to, you know, the movie sort of being a deconstruction of that character,
mm-hmm.
which I think it is too. I think we can all agree, like it's kind of in a weird way.
Very critically, if you wanted to look at it, it is. But you kind of have to start doing a bit of digging before you get to that.
But like, the filmmakers obviously have like a thing of like, all right, let's give Goofy like a realistic treatment, and it's like let's pull from all of these like cultural all this cultural content that we, you know, have seen before and that sort of stuff to inform this realistic portrayal of Goofy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, especially when you consider how out of favor those Mickey Mouse cartoons have sort of fallen out. You know what I mean? And not because they're bad or anything like that, but it's just like they don't make money. You know what I mean?
The style has changed.
Yeah, the style has changed, and it's like you know, they've sort of folded back into being this sort of mascot almost. Mm-hmm. You know, like how often do you see Goofy as in like your day-to-day cultural thing? You know what I mean? Like,
well,
every day.
If you're listening to this, you're like, well, better get my Goof Troop t-shirt. Get
on the series.
Yeah, works. Ton of, you know, Goof posting on Facebook.
Goofy memes from Max Like T.
But like, you know, I mean, it's kind of like the last time that they can kind of do
anything like this. It kind of was just,
yeah, it's kind of the end.
It's
of
not
it.
Like a last ditch effort.
No,
because they certainly weren't like dying or anything.
No. But
I think
it's
they just passed. They just passed their time.
Yeah,
and they kind of, I think they went out gracefully, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, considering they followed this up with a sequel where Max goes to the extreme,
which
games,
we
they definitely
will
did.
Cover also
in another episode, a sequel episode, an extremely
Goofy
mediocre movie.
We got the title already.
If anyone doesn't have anything else to say,
I want to talk about the gloves situation. I know you want to talk about the glove situation.
Yes, I totally...
Let's talk about the glove situation.
This is just a thing that absolutely pained me once I noticed it. There is no characteristic that determines whether a character has hands or gloves. Because Goofy has gloves, Max has gloves, Max's friend with the mohawk, Paulie Shaw, had gloves. PJ did not have gloves. No, PJ had gloves. PJ had gloves. Pete had gloves. But Roxanne didn't. The principal didn't. The other girl who has...
A lot of secondary characters don't.
There's a Some of them do, and there's just no real reason why one character would have gloves and none. And with first we were like, oh, it's because you're related to Goof, though. And
then Mickey Mouse has the gloves.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I thought it was because of...
No, he doesn't actually, sorry.
Back in like the early 20s and 30s, when they were drawing all these characters originally, they all had a very similar cartoon style. Like how Casper and Richie Rich are the same person.
And when when he said that, I agreed, watching the movie. And then Paulie Shaw came back on screen, and Paulie Shaw had gloves.
It's just because Paulie Shaw is that cool. He deserved iconic Disney character.
No. It just killed me. I'm pretty sure the truck driver didn't have gloves. There was just a whole bunch of, like, gloves to gloveless people, and I couldn't understand. Now thinking about it, maybe it's the lower society that doesn't have gloves. Because Roxanne's dad, who literally could not speak a word of English, didn't have gloves. Roxanne did because she...
Did the principal have gloves, though?
The principal did. But maybe he was poor, and he worked his way up. But you can't,
I feel like, look...
You can't buy gloves. You can't buy new hands.
I feel like the same question can be asked. Why does it matter if... Why does it matter whether or not they have gloves or not have gloves? And then, you know, on the...
It matters to me because I want to know these kind of things. It does not matter to the overall arc of the film.
I feel like you could ask the same question, you know, if they all had gloves, why...
Well, then why is Pluto a dog?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Why is Goofy a dog?
See, I just feel like these are starting to become, like, really arbitrary kind of questions.
You're pulling at the very fabric of Walt Disney Universe.
We're really starting to, like, pick out
If you want to pull at the fabric, the fact that Walt Disney exists
in the said universe,
That's a better argument, I reckon. That's got a bit more ground.
All right. If no one has anything to say, does everyone want to give their ratings of the movie?
All right.
That's a good idea.
Now that we're at the post. Brad, would you like to start? Because I feel like yours will be the most different.
Upon a close viewing, on a narrow viewing, on like a, you know, very surface level viewing, I would say, as a child, I would have given this film probably 10 out of 10 because I did as a child, taking off the rose colored glasses now. Some of the animation's pretty sketchy. Narratively speaking, not really consistent throughout the whole thing. There's kind of some continuity issues.
A lot.
The characterization's nice. I think, like, there's some good characterization. Across the board, I don't think anybody is kind of like, that doesn't seem like that's a real person. It's like...
Yeah.
Everybody kind of gets a moment to be a real person, except for the principal, maybe.
But he's got, like, 5 lines, so you can't expect...
I think the school... But, I mean, like, he does hold a certain role in the movie. But anyway, everybody sort of gets a moment to sort of have a genuine human moment, which I think, like...
Except Paulie Shaw, who just yells,
Paulie Shaw.
Cheddar, and then falls in love at the end.
Yeah.
That is true, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think definitely...
Out of 10?
Genuine, I would say out of 10, yeah, probably like a 7.
All right,
that's fair.
Keaton?
So, you know, for what it was worth, safe, overall a safe film, but I still enjoyed my time watching it. I think the central themes are still relevant today. It's a movie that will probably not go down in history, but, you know, that's kind of what we're looking for. Although, for me, I don't think it's still quite the saltine.
It's not beige.
It's not beige. It's not beige enough. I give it about a 6.
Yeah, 6 out of 10. I'm feeling that, the 6. The story was good. The jokes, you know, they landed. I found quite a few of them quite funny. It was interesting. But then it ended really quickly. Animation was a bit off. Once that was pointed out, it really started to bother me. and obviously the gloves issue.
See, I'd be like, this is an interesting movie for me because there's some really, like, really good strong points about it. Like, There are some very emotional scenes, very powerful. There's a lot of good quality jokes. But, like, at the same time, the negative factors, the poor animation in spots, the terrible pacing of the script, and the fact that it's...
Although
it would be a good thing, like, back in the 90s, the fact that it's probably the most 90s movie I've seen, that doesn't bode well, the fact that it's now 22 years later. I'd have to say, if I was probably going to give this a rating out of 10, I would actually give it a 5. I would say this would be probably the most mediocre movie I've seen.
Fair enough.
That's far.
Series
isn't over.
I'd imagine this is going to be...
Series one.
We all need to have
a... Everyone needs to agree that it's going to be 5.
And fine. If we're not all here, then the other person who... But the other remaining people have to see it and also give it 5.
Yeah.
And we'll send the director a crown, I think.
We'll give them a crown. We'll send them a personalised email.
Congratulations. You made a okay film that will not be remembered.
So yeah, I guess the quest continues.
The quest continues. Yeah, I've been Riley.
I'm still Keaton.
Very much still Brad.
And I'm also here.
Alright, thank you. We'll be back eventually with probably robots or an extremely goofy movie, because sequels are cool.
Definitely sequels robots.